All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Providence POV. The regular season has officially ended. We have a ton in store for you for today's episode, including a breakdown of what was a god-awful final home game against UConn. Joe and Peter with you as always, but today we welcome back Matt St. Jean to the podcast. Matt, what's going on? Long time no see. How you doing?
Happy to be back on the show here for an episode. Wish it was under, you know, better circumstances. Saturday obviously did not go as we all hoped, but you know, it's all a new season starting Wednesday night at Madison Square Garden. We'll see what they can make of it.
Absolutely. Peter, off to you. How you doing?
Well, I wish it could be a little better. Yeah, Saturday night wasn't pretty outside of the first, I guess, 7-8 minutes. So if you just watch those highlights on a loop, you'll be satisfied. But if you watch the rest of the game, you'd be a little annoyed. But no, it's Big East tournament. It's a fun week. It's always a fun week, no matter where your team is, maybe outside of DePaul. But no matter what, it's a fun week. It's exciting. And there's a lot of games and a lot of matchups that obviously couldn't tell. And there's a path for Providence. And obviously, we'll get into that.
Yeah, more of the fun stuff on the back half of the show today. But first, we have to talk about the Dan Hurley-sized elephant in the room, and that is Providence just shits the bed at home against UConn on senior night. You know, it was deja vu to last year when Seton Hall came in on senior night and kicked our teeth in. It was not really competitive after the first 8 minutes. Providence goes up 15-2 and then concedes a 40-2 run to UConn to end the half, and the second half was not much better. My mom actually made a funny comparison. She said it looked like Providence was playing against an NBA team, and that was pretty accurate. UConn is the second-ranked team in the country for a reason. They are extremely talented, and they will capitalize on any mistakes that you make. And Providence made plenty. I think the second foul on Oduro was a momentum shifter. Not enough momentum to, you know, allow UConn to go up almost 20 at halftime. I don't think that is justifiable, but certainly a momentum shifter nonetheless. Matt, we'll start with you since you're the guest. What were your takeaways from that game? You know, what stuck out to you? were there any good things?
But I think the good thing is you can see the impact of home court advantage. You can see how good of a player Devin Carter is right off the bat. Obviously, this game started as well as anybody could have hoped for, and you get a big lead on UConn right away. But you know, the second guy started to get tired, the second Oduro gets in foul trouble, the second the shots are no longer falling, momentum fades away, and once that initial high is gone, and it's just the two teams playing basketball, I mean, UConn's a national title contender for a reason, and you saw it. I think in some ways this game said more about UConn than it said about Providence. I mean, the ability to go on the road into an environment like that, go down by that many points, and still be completely unfazed by it and go on to a blowout victory. I hate tipping my cap to Dan Hurley, but I don't really think there's anything else you can do when that happens. It's a good team, and Hopefully we can get some kind of revenge on them on Saturday.
Yeah. I agree with you. I hate giving any sort of compliment in any form to Dan Hurley. But you know, he got his guys to respond in the best of ways. Peter, you're up.
Yeah, Matt, you said it perfectly. Like it is tough to, I guess, tip your hat to Dan Hurley just because of No, I don't have to explain why it is hard, but because it's Dan Hurley. But no, look, what Saturday night showed us is a couple of things, right? Obviously, like Matt said, it showed UConn's a powerhouse. UConn's a really good team. They're going to be vying for a Big East tournament championship this week, and then obviously an NCAA tournament championship the coming weeks, right? But it also showed on the Providence side, right? It showed where this team is, and we kind of know where this team is. We've known for the last, I would say, month and a half. Joe, you and I have talked about it maybe a million times on this podcast, where this team is without Bryce Hopkins, right? Like,
yep.
They're very They're very one-dimensional. They're very reliant on Devin Carter, and then obviously they're relying on Josh Adoro. But when your second-best scorer is a big man who can't create his own shot, which is not his fault. That's most big men in the Big East. You become really reliant on one guy, and you've relied on other guys to step up and play in roles that they're not – they were never supposed to, they're not expected to, and they can't, right? And Saturday night's the definition, right? Like UConn has guys coming at you from all different angles, and they're starting five. They've had dealt with really little injury this year, and when you don't have that same punch on offense – you're going to struggle. They haven't had that same punch on offense against other teams in the Big East. But when it's UConn, you don't have that same punch. And we know who we are Saturday night. We're very Devin Carter, Josh Doro-led team. And you're hoping other guys make shots, and they didn't. And you get the result that we saw on Saturday night.
Yeah, you had
– go ahead, Matt.
Nobody not named Devin Carter or Josh Doro made a basket in the first half. I mean, that kind of sums it up right there, I think, jumping off what Peter said.
I was going to say that. I mean, that stat speaks volumes. I was just going to talk about the box score holistically, right? You have nobody scoring or rebounding in double figures except for Josh and Devin. I'm going to throw it back to, you know, last Tuesday's game at Georgetown, right? Ed Cooley in the huddle says, you know, they only got two dudes, and you know he knows the camera and the microphone are there, and he said it on purpose to dig at the Providence fan base. But he's not wrong, right? If you look at the defensive schemes that almost every coach has put out in the back half of conference play, it's put your best guy on Carter, double team Oduro when he gets the ball, and take a gamble that somebody else is going to hit a shot. And most of the time, that's a safe gamble to make. It's unfortunate because, like Kim said in the press conference, we got caught with our pants down this season once Bryce got hurt. Providence didn't have the depth to withstand an all Big East caliber player going down. Carter can put the cape on for stretches, and so did Josh, but you need a consistent third level of scoring to supplement the top two. And on top of that, right, like you need guys to beyond scoring, to rebound, to defend, to give you consistent minutes. And it seems like after Devin and Josh, it was kind of a plug and play for that third guy. Sometimes it was Ticket, sometimes it was Jaden, sometimes it was Rich Barron, sometimes it was Corey Floyd. You never really knew who the third player was going to be. I saw a tweet actually, you know, in the hours following the game that the rankings were Devin, Josh, and Rich Barron, and the all-conference accolades that came out all but reassured that, because Rich Barron was the only Friar with Devin and Josh to be named to an honor. He was named to the all-freshman team. So this isn't meant to knock any of the supporting cast, but you know, I think it's safe now at this point with the regular season under wraps to call attention to something that's been glaringly obvious, but you know, more or less unsaid by, you know, this group here on this podcast, but has been widely broadcasted by the burners across Twitter.
But you mentioned the rebounding too. I think that's a huge thing for this team. You lose Bryce Hopkins and you don't have much weight in the post to box out or to fight for rebounds. You know, Ticket Gaines can play the four, but he's not a guy you want doing that for long minutes in the Big East. And now he's starting at that spot. Yeah. And I think you saw a lot of possessions where the Friars really had to collapse to try to fight for defensive rebounds. And, you know, UConn shoots a lot of threes, and sometimes those rebounds go out a little bit further than you think. Now Providence is scrambling for a rebound on the inside. The ball gets kicked out somewhere on the outside, and UConn gets up a wide open three. They were very good with second chance points on Saturday night. And like, I think when you can't control the ball at all, you have to devote so many bodies to fix one issue because you don't have Bryce Hopkins. It leaves you vulnerable. Credit to the Huskies for being good enough to exploit that. And now there's no fix for that until Bryce comes back.
Right.
Yeah. And something you said, second chance points, right? And UConn getting open shots, right? And something that the reason the offense has struggled this year, right? Like we all know it, right? And it struggled since Bryce Hopkins left, and it struggled on Saturday night. And then it always has a chain reaction, right, to the defensive side of the ball, right? When you're not scoring and when you're not hitting shots, it's really hard to go on the other side of the court and defend. And then against UConn, you have to defend like the best you've ever defended, right? And when you're not missing, when you're missing shots and they're going down and they have open shots and they're getting offensive rebounds, kicking it back out, and they're making other shots, right? Like you, it has a chain effect, right? And we've seen it a ton of times. The defense has dropped since Bryce Hopkins has left. And that's a couple of reasons. Obviously, it's because I think what I just said, the offense has struggled. It leads to defense struggling, but it also is because Bryce Hopkins is a very underrated defender, a very good defender, and we miss his presence down low. We miss his presence on the perimeter, and it's just a chain reaction, and you can't really stop it, right? And when UConn got going and they got hot, because they started slow in this game, and when they got hot, our offense completely just went away, and then our defense started to suffer, and then like we saw in the first half, the end of the first half, it was a chain reaction, and the chain reaction was a disaster.
Well, I also think there's something to be said here about, you know, when your offense starts with you taking the ball out of the net and inbounding and giving your opponent the opportunity to set up their half-court defense, or in some cases, you know, three-quarter court press, etc., right? Like, it's much more difficult to score. Whereas you get a defensive rebound and you try and get something in transition, not all the defenders are back yet, you know, chances are you probably are going to get a quicker bucket, especially with some of the athletes on this team, right? You know, I just talked about depth, but that doesn't mean they're not athletes. That doesn't mean they can't run in transition and get the right guy the ball at the right time. But like you said, Peter, when UConn is continually hitting shots, it makes it that much more difficult to, you know, get into your half court offense. And also I think there's something to be said about the atmosphere. That building was very well lubricated for a 8 o'clock tip on Saturday against the number two team in the country, present company included. So I was there. It was as deafening as it was last year when Providence upset number four ranked UConn in early January. Mm-hmm. By, you know, halftime, that the crowd wasn't even itching to get back into it. You know, 2 weeks ago against Villanova on Saturday, every opportunity the crowd had to try and like peek its way back in, we tried, but Villanova put a stop to that. Nobody was even trying. I mean, with about little under 10 minutes left in the second half, people were leaving and heading for the exits. In 8 or 9 years as a Friars fan, you know, it's very rare that people leave that early into the game unless, you know, it's a non-conference team and we're blowing them out. So it was a disappointing end to the season at home. It calls into question the home court advantage that has been so highly touted nationally over the past two seasons, because, you know, we're not as indestructible at home as we used to be. And, you know, I don't even think that's a Cooley thing. I think it's just a time thing. But curious your guys' thoughts on that.
I mean, I think part of that is just the guys on the floor, too. If you're playing a close game, then that home court advantage can be a big factor. But if you're outmatched talent-wise or scheme-wise, you can yell all you want, but that's not going to stop the shots from falling for the other team.
True.
Yeah, I actually kind of feel the opposite about the home court advantage. I think you saw it. I think that was the only reason why this game was close from the opening tip for a little bit.
Fair.
When you have a roster that, no offense to the roster, that can't make shots consistently, right? When you have guys that just don't make shots, like the crowd gets taken out of it. And I don't think that's like a thing just at Providence. That's a thing, I think, across the country for the most part, right? Like, if you ever watch any other game you watch, and there's a lot of great home court advantages in the Big East, but especially across the country in college basketball. But like, if your team's not making shots and you're getting down early and you play a team that is just relentless on both sides of the ball, right? It's hard for a crowd that, not to take a shot at, let's say, for example, the Providence crowd, but let's say 80% of the, maybe 75% are not like, I would say us three, in the sense of like super die hard, if you know what I mean. Like, they're not like, they're kind of, they're, I don't know how to say it without criticizing a bunch of people here, but it's it's more of like the fact that, like, if you get down early and you can take the crowd out of any crowd, right? Like, it's hard to cheer when you're down 15 and you hit a bucket, oh, 13, and then they answer and you're just like, whoop, we cheered for half a second and then it's 15, right? Like, the team kind of has to get the crowd back into it. Like, the crowd starts, this starts loud, it starts into it, and if you start hot like we did Saturday night, it will stay in it. But once the team bails and they don't get the crowd, but they have to get the crowd back into it. You have to get that game from the 15, 18, whatever it was, to 8. That's how you get the crowd back in it. You got to go on a 10-0 run, and we never did it, so you never got the crowd back into it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't know, maybe I should rephrase. I don't know if I'm calling into question, you know, the quality of the crowd, because it was a sold-out arena, and there were plenty of loud fans there. But I think just the notion of home court advantage, meaning, you know, teams coming in and feeling safe, I guess I should say, because when Villanova came, UConn, right, like Seton Hall, Xavier, when we were down, and I don't mean down double figures, I mean like down a couple of possessions, it didn't necessarily feel safe. Even when we were down at halftime to St. John's, like, the possibility creeping in, like, okay, we could lose at home right now, became a reality.
No, that makes sense. Oh, sorry, Matt. I thought you were going.
No, I didn't.
I blanked. No, that makes sense. No, yeah, like, I don't think you're calling into question the crowd, Joe, and I'm trying not to criticize the fans that go to the game by saying they're not diehards, but, like, what the product on the court sometimes dictates the crowd, right? And some crowds are better than others, right? And it doesn't matter what the product on the court is for the most part. But, like,
agreed.
When you go up so early and you just completely come crashing down, it is hard to get back into it, because from everyone's point of view, I think from our three point of view, the game was over at halftime. Like, there was no chance. The game was over probably 5 minutes left in the first, right? Like, you can kind of get that sense. And unlike the St. John's game at halftime, when you had a chance in that game, right? Even though you still had the possibility of losing that game, but you still had a chance, and obviously they ended up winning that game at home. But UConn at home, down by that much at halftime, you had no chance. You could have left at halftime. You could have turned the TV off at halftime, right? Like, it was over. So I think the crowd kind of senses that for the most part.
Yeah. When you give a 36-5 run, it's hard to get excited.
It's hard to get. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. No, the product on the court definitely dictates, you know, getting the crowd, getting the atmosphere back into it. So I'm not going to, you know, dispute that here either.
I have one more comment on the play on the court too, before we move on.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
I think you really missed having Garway Dual out there.
Yes.
Even with, you know, what his limited offense, I think you basically played the entire game against the number two team in the country with just 6 players, and that's really tough, especially when your guys aren't that good. You know, if you want to, you know, Providence wants to be up tempo and you want to be aggressive, you want to play in transition, and it's hard to do that when you just don't have many players. I think Dual, with his athleticism and his defensive ability, you're not going to win the game if he's out there. But he gives you a stopper that you can put in on defense, and
right,
you can give Pierre more of a breather at any point in there. And you know, it's something that Kim English touched on after the game, that they got off to that hot start, and then there wasn't a timeout for like the first 6 minutes. And it seemed like everybody was aghast after the first 6 minutes. And then you don't even have subs. The only sub you were really doing was Rich Barron, and Castro played too, but he only played 9 minutes. He didn't even hit the 10-minute mark with Oduro getting into foul trouble. So, right.
And Pierre wasn't good on Saturday night.
Nope.
It's not like Pierre had one of his better performances where you could have swallowed not having Garway. Pierre was 3-for-10 from the field with 6 turnovers and had no assists. That was probably his worst performance of the year, let alone not really being a great defender in general. You could have 100% used Garway's defensive ability, his length, ability to rebound on those long rebounds, right? Like, you missed Garway. Not even just for the sake of depth. You missed Garway because I think Garway would have played more minutes than Pierre. They yanked Pierre at that point in the game with no other point guard. They yanked him because he was a liability. Like, you needed to, look, I agree with you, Matt. They have Garway. They don't. It's not like they win the game. We're not. It's not like it's Devin Carter not on the court, right? Like, they don't not win the game, but you needed someone else to make play a little defense, and Pierre didn't defend, and then Pierre was a liability with 6 turnovers and 3 for 10 from the field with no assist from your starting point guard. That was an issue.
And I think this is big picture for the team. Their point guard play hasn't been good, and they turned the ball over a lot as a result. They lost their best rebounder, so they struggle on the glass. And that means at both ends of the floor, you're going to struggle to control the ball. And the only way to kind of overcome that is really 2 ways. 1, you force a lot of turnovers. 2, you make a lot of shots. They don't force a lot of turnovers, and they don't make a lot of shots. So when you play teams that are about as good as you, you're going to have games where you do hit more shots. But when you get outclassed like this, I mean, you need your opponent to have an off night, and you need to have a night like we saw this team have against Wisconsin back in non-conference play, and neither of those things happened.
Yeah. Matt, I want to make a comment about the, you know, the 6 or so minutes without a timeout to start the game. You know, I'm going to give Dan Hurley a lot of credit here. I think not calling a timeout there when Providence was on that run was extremely smart by him. You know, we're playing down guys, and, you know, as it stands, we don't have the depth to, you know, sustain a 13-point lead over the second team in the country. But on top of that, you're down Garway. So not calling a timeout there, okay, let them have their fun. We're going to come out and punch you back harder. That was a great, I guess, no call by Hurley to not call the timeout there. I noticed that in real time with the Romanos, who, Matt, I know you know who we were sitting with. We were saying, you know, good call by him not to call a timeout there. But you know, Garway would have helped. Jaden had a really tough night. Like you said, Peter, 6 turnovers to no assists. I like Jaden off the ball a lot. I think he's a better scorer than distributor. And I think Garway defensively is longer and a little bit more athletic than Jaden on that side of the basketball. But, you know, as devastatingly terrible as Saturday night was, and as tough of a way as it was to send out Ticket and Josh, the season is not over yet. The Big East tournament, like we alluded to at the beginning of the show, the Big East tournament is this week. Providence will get Georgetown at 6:30 in the first round on Wednesday night. If Providence wins that game, they will face the number 2 seeded Creighton Blue Jays at 7 p.m. on Thursday. But first and foremost, our old demon is back again, Ed Cooley, for the 3rd time in his first season at the helm of the Hoyas. I mean, for Christ's sake, you know, I had to go and mute every Georgetown account on Twitter because I just cannot stand seeing all of the Cooley and Providence stuff anymore. I'm getting sick of it.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It's a nice little dinner date with our ex in Midtown Manhattan. What could go wrong?
Honestly.
It's a good way to put it. It's of course, right? Like, why wouldn't this happen? And look, you're playing. The cliche is that it's hard to beat a team 3 times in a year, right? Like, you use that in football, in NFL, like a team in your division, right? You play them twice. Oh, and somehow you get matched up with them in the wild card playoffs. It happened to the Bills 2 years ago. They beat the Dolphins twice they beat the Dolphins, and then it's like, oh, it's hard to beat a team multiple times, right? And more than multiple times. And it's just a thing. And it's, of course, it's against Ed Cooley, but it's a Georgetown team that, well, Georgetown didn't have a great year, but they have players. They have guys that can score. Jaden Epps can score the basketball. We've watched it. They gave, I would say St. John's a very good run for their money on Saturday, and probably made a lot of St. John's fans a little scared for about a couple minutes of that game. And obviously St. John's took care of business at the end, but Georgetown 100% gave a full effort there. But look, we saw Georgetown twice. They don't defend the basketball. The problem with us, we don't consistently score the basketball. But it's a game they should win. They obviously 100% have to win the game if they want to talk about an at-large bid. for the NCAA tournament, and it would be a very unfortunate way to go out if you win 19 games in Kim English's first year, you beat Georgetown and Anacoli twice, you did what you were supposed to against them, and of course you get matched up with them on Wednesday needing a win, and you lose. It would be a very unfortunate win, fortunate way to go out. I'm hopefully Georgetown's still a little bit checked out player-wise, but you know Ed Cooley's 100% not checked out.
Here's the thing. I get the whole, you know, tough to beat a team three times, but also
I'm not saying it's true. It's more of a cliche that people like.
Yeah, no. Like, I get that. I think it applies when two teams are relatively evenly matched.
Fair.
I don't think Providence and Georgetown are evenly matched. I think the first game was really only as close as it was because of the emotion of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the second game was, you know, kind of close at points, but very, very much not in question by the end. And I kind of think we see something similar on Wednesday. You know, this Georgetown team isn't good. We talk about Providence not having depth. Georgetown's is even worse. And for as bad as this run has been at the end of the year for the Friars, you know, they've lost some games to good teams. They've lost games where you've got Pierre banged up or out. You got Duwall out, things like that. And they're at full strength on Wednesday. I think that's a better group on the floor than we've seen at least the last couple weeks. So I think they bounce back with a win on Wednesday. It's what happens on Thursday that becomes more important.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you here, Matt. I think when we first saw Georgetown, you know, as an aside, let's not pretend that Ed Cooley doesn't know all of the rhetoric that goes on in the background about him. He certainly would have loved the opportunity to come into Providence and beat us. So let's keep that in mind when we look at that 8-point win in January. I think the second time around, like you said, Matt, was closer to, you know, what should be expected. Georgetown did play well at the Garden this past weekend, but keep in mind, they traveled back to D.C. and have to travel back again within, you know, a 5-day span. So that's a lot of traveling for a team. They're not very deep. They're not very talented, you know, aside from Jaden Epps, who takes a ton of shots. I think, like you said, if everybody that is healthy on this roster plays to the maximum ability, we should be comfortable on Wednesday. And then, you know, you get to Thursday, and this is where we start getting into, you know, the weeds of what needs to happen to, you know, kind of poke our head back into the at-large conversation for the NCAA tournament.
No, yeah, right. Like, obviously, it starts Wednesday, right? And you can't even talk. Well, we can talk about it because we're not playing on the court, and obviously that would be an issue inside itself. But if, you can't even, like, you get to Thursday, right? And you have, obviously, it would be Creighton at 7 o'clock on Thursday, which prime time, Madison Square Garden, can't get much better than that. Obviously, Creighton travels really well to the Northeast for a Midwest team, and obviously there'd be a crap ton of Providence fans, right? So you have that, but you're playing for your – we talked about it for a long time off air before we hit record and realized we should hit record. But, like, on Thursday you play for – and we're all kind of a little bit in – a little bit have different opinions on this. But Thursday, like, I'm in the boat that if you win Thursday and nothing, like, super crazy happens throughout the country, right, like you don't have 2 to 3 bid stealers in other conferences, then – I think you're in, but obviously it's still a difference in opinion. I do think if you win Thursday, it's like 50-50. It's probably a coin toss. I think if you win Friday and you get to Saturday, I think I'm pushing more 70 to 80%. That's where I stand, and I know everyone has a little bit of a different opinion on this.
Yeah, it's all comes down to what the committee values, and they're so fickle. I mean, with how the committee is, it wouldn't shock me to see this team get to Friday and still not get, or get to Saturday and still not make the dance, because sometimes they just value these games less. And
yeah,
you know, there's a world where you just make it to Friday and you still end up making it, because it's going to depend on, you know, which wins the committee values, how much they value the metrics, how much they value, you know, Bryce Hopkins' injury and how the team has looked since then. So it's interesting. And I think if you're the Friars, you kind of have to put it out of your mind and just go play basketball. You know, you're what you're looking at is a Georgetown team that you swept, a Creighton team that you beat once this year without Bryce Hopkins, and then you see what happens after that. If you get Marquette, you know, you beat them this year. Nova, obviously, you lost to twice, but largely because of poor stretches in both of those games. And outside of a couple of poor stretches they played with them, I think you can beat Nova. So I don't know. I think I honestly, this might be a controversial thing. I kind of feel like the fact that Providence isn't a deep team might help them this week, because this is a team that is so streaky shooting the basketball. And if they get hot at any point, none of these guys are coming off the floor. They're all going to be playing. You don't have time to reset. Yeah. So if these guys, you know, if Jaden Pierre comes out and really, really gets hot, or Corey Floyd, you know, finds his shot, then that may carry over from Wednesday into Friday without much of an issue, because he's going to be on the floor the whole time. Lack of depth gets thrown around, but like you look at those Villanova teams that steamrolled through the Big East tournament, that one that beat Providence back in 2018, they played just six guys. They only had six guys play double-digit minutes. I think the question with the depth is how good the players are, not how many people are in the rotation.
I think, you know, to double down on that, even though it was a loss, you have to look at Providence's, you know, the way that the team played at Butler. You know, sans the final 4 minutes of the second half. You know, that was a coming out game for Corey Floyd Jr. Obviously, Devin Carter did the things that he does, but you got great contributions up and down the lineup. And I think most notably from Garway Dual and Rich Barron. And keep in mind, Providence played seven guys that game. And really, you know, Castor only played 12 minutes. So he played seven guys, no starting center, and, you know, managed to only lose by three on the road in Hinkle Fieldhouse. So I think that point's extremely well taken, Matt, where, you know, the lack of depth here might prove to be beneficial. We've seen Providence teams in the past. Whoa, weird. I don't know what that was. We've seen Providence teams in the past, you know, benefit off of the hot play of a couple of guys in the Big East tournament. I think of Kyron Cartwright, like you just mentioned, Matt, in the 2018 Big East tournament. You know, him and Alpha Diallo were electric. 2019 Big East tournament, you have Malik White, who had an up and down season, you know, firing from three against Butler, and then, you know, even in a loss to Villanova, put up some numbers. So a lot of the regular season stuff, I don't want to say it goes out the window, but certainly changes when you get to Madison Square Garden. You're playing for your life. You're playing for, you know, a chance in the big dance. And, you know, if we're using the 2018 Friars team as a focal point here, something to reference, you know, that team was on the bubble coming into Madison Square Garden week. They did not win the Big East tournament championship, but were still invited to the big dance because of the way that they played in Manhattan. So if Providence can string together a couple of wins this week, my number is two. I think if you beat Georgetown and you beat Creighton, that's a win over Creighton would be your sixth quadrant one win. That's 21 wins on the season. I think that puts together a better who'd you beat resume than some of the other teams on the bubble. I think that should at least get us in the last four in, you know, first four in Dayton conversation. But again, that's just my opinion. I know that there's so many differing takes on this, but I think the magic number is two. You got to get to Friday. I think if you get through Friday and make it to Saturday, you know, there shouldn't be much.
Yeah, I agree. And look, on Friday, I was just getting one thing. On Friday, you might get a Tower Colick-less Marquette, right? And that's obviously a couple of days away, and that's obviously a couple wins away, but that also could obviously bode well for Villanova. And they're obviously, assuming Villanova beats DePaul on Wednesday, that could bode well for Villanova and their NCAA tournament chances, which is probably the biggest storyline. Obviously, biggest storyline is like bubble teams heading into the Big East tournament, but in terms of just players, it's probably, do we get Tower Kolick on Thursday? Because that has a huge effect on Villanova's bubble teams. It could affect Providence. It could affect who wins the whole thing at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's going to be you know, a huge part of it. And, you know, I also, taking a step back beyond the whole bracketology or even the matchups, talk about players getting hot and your biggest players shining in moments like this. It's Devin Carter, a guy who is capable of being Big East Player of the Year. We'll see if he actually comes down with the award, but he did make unanimous first team. Get to see him at Madison Square Garden under the bright lights in primetime and hopefully for at least two games here. And that's going to be fun to watch. I want to see him put on a show. And from a star powers perspective, it's going to be a ton of fun. You probably get a lot of Providence fans there on Thursday if you know the Friars end up getting through. You can probably get a loud environment. And you get a player like that in that spotlight with a lot of crowd, and you're gonna get a lot of neutral fans rooting for him because he's so much fun to watch. That makes for a great story if things go our way.
Yeah, I mean, not to mention, you talk about the crowd Wednesday night. There's not only will there be, you know, a healthy showing of Providence, New York alumni, but you're going to have the healthy showing of Ed Cooley haters, too. Let's not forget that the one uniter of all conference teams minus Georgetown has been a hatred for Ed Cooley. Nobody wants to see him succeed, maybe, you know, except for a couple of UConn fans. But for the most part, you know, a majority of the Big East has been united in rooting against Ed Cooley. You get a lot of those guys under the same roof. I think there will be plenty of Providence fans, even with no affiliation to the school, at 6:30 on Wednesday.
Yeah. You could have home court here for your first two games, depending on, you know, how well the Providence fans travel, how well the Creighton fans travel. Because Creighton fans do travel exceptionally well.
They do.
Especially to the Big East tournament.
Yes. But it should be a fun one. Yeah. You get goosebumps just thinking about these games. So even with the disappointing stuff, it's hard not to get excited.
All three of us will be there. So,
right, that's right.
Excited for it. Be there.
Okay. Yeah. So that's exciting. And look, magic happens at the Big East tournament, and you can say that for like a couple other teams, right? Like Villanova wins a couple games during the NCAA tournament. St. John's probably a win or two away from locking up a bid. I think Seton Hall is locked up, but then you never know. Butler and X maybe makes it a little bit exciting and gets maybe wins a couple games, and you never know, right? Like a lot of teams are, some teams are kind of fighting for seeds. Like what seed are they in the NCAA tournament? And then there's I think Seton Hall is a lock at this point, but there's the St. John's, Villanova, and Providence all battling for a bubble because you never know. Like if St. John's loses Thursday, then I think they're in, but you never know, right? Like St. John's has a huge game Thursday. Villanova has to win Wednesday and maybe win Thursday. Like it's a fun, exciting week because there's so many teams that are fighting for their lives.
I'm looking at the other side of the bracket here. If Seton Hall gets through St. John's and we get a Seton Hall UConn game on Friday, that would be very interesting because that's the one team that's kind of had UConn's number. Yeah. As of late, if there's going to be upsets in this tournament, or you look at Providence's path, you know, there's a world where it's Georgetown, a team that's been truly dreadful, Creighton team that you've already beaten this year and is streaky with shooting. You could go through a Marquette team without Tyler Kolek, and then maybe Seton Hall upsets UConn, and you don't have to play UConn in the championship game. Like, if you want to talk yourself into it, there's a path here.
I showed you guys my piece of paper. I've already mapped out our path. Separate from what I have, you know, inked next to me, part of me feels like UConn's not going to make it to Championship Saturday. I feel like, you know, for all of the good that UConn has done this season, you know, they've been near perfect in every game. They've only lost three games. I can't see them doing it. For some reason, it seems almost too perfect to me that UConn is going to win the Big East tournament.
I do love that we started this podcast comparing UConn to an NBA team, and by the end, we're talking about how they definitely won't make the championship game of the Big East tournament.
Well, maybe not definitely. highly likely, but
they do have a good path. Like their path isn't.
They have a very favorable path.
I think St. John's, I don't think St. John's can beat them, but a St. John's home crowd, basically, St. John's crowd with Villanova fans on a Friday is, I think that's cool. That's really cool. I don't think St. John's can beat UConn, but I think for an environment, with an environment standpoint, I think that would be electric.
Yeah. All right. I think we're just about out of stuff to say here. Any closing thoughts from you two gentlemen?
Get to Friday. Let Devin Carter put on a show, and I'll be pretty happy with this season, given the circumstances.
Yeah, agree. I agree. If you get to Friday, maybe see what happens Friday night, but make the committee try to keep Devin Carter and this team out of the tournament, or keep a 21 win team out of the tournament. But you have to get to Friday. You win Wednesday and you lose Thursday. Then next week when Joe and I are recording, we're not talking about the NCAA tournament. So you got to get to Friday. But hopefully we can go 3-0 against Georgetown and then see what happens Thursday night against a really good Creighton team.
Yeah, you got to get to Friday.
Yep.
All right. At about 40 minutes, I think that is going to do it from us here at POV. As always, be sure to check out house-enterprise.com to check out all of the great content that our writers and podcasters put out, especially this time of year. Matt's got plenty on the site. That's where you'll also find this episode. A special thank you to Matt St. Jean, former founder of the Flex Hoops, for coming back on today. We missed you, buddy. It was great to have you on. As always, thank you for listening. Go Friars.
Go Friars.